Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Recordati 2019 first half results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Marianne Tacchi, Director, Investor Relations and Corporate Communications of Recordati. Please go ahead, madam.
Good afternoon or good morning to everyone, and thank you for attending the Recordati conference call today. Andrea Recordati, our CEO, and Fritz Grindle, our CFO, will be presenting and commenting upon our first half 2019 results. For a better understanding of this presentation, please access the set of slides available on our website, www.recordati.com, under the Investors section and Presentations tab. At the end of the presentation, we will answer any questions you may have. Andrea, please go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for connecting to our first half results highlights presentation. Let me start off. We are obviously pleased with our first half results, which show continued growth in 2019. Our consolidated revenue is 743.3 million euros, and it's up 6.8%. This includes sales generated by NaturalPoint, the Italian company acquired and consolidated as of the 1st of July 2018, which equates to 9.7 million euros. It also includes the sales generated by Tonipharm, which was acquired in France at the end of 2018 and consolidated as from the 1st of January 2019, with sales of 13.6 million euros. Finally, also the sales of Juxtapid that we acquired under license in Japan in February 2019, with sales of 4.4 million. In addition to an estimated negative currency exchange rate effect of approximately 8.9 million euros, excluding this item's growth would have been 4.1%. EBITDA at 37.6% of sales is 279.3 million euros and is up 7.4% on last year. Operating income at 32.6% of sales is 242.6 million euros, with an increase over last year of 4.6%. Finally, net income at 23.4% of sales is at 174.3 million euros and shows an increase of 6.1% over the same period of the preceding year. Net debt is at 610.9 million euros compared to a net debt of 588.4 million euros at the 31st of December 2018. During this period, the dividends were distributed for amount of 96.1 million euros. An amount of 30 million euros was paid for the license agreement with Algerian Pharmaceuticals Asia, covering the exclusive rights to Juxtapid in Japan. A 20 million milestone was paid to Helsinn for the license agreement for Ledaga. Furthermore, the application of the IFRS 16 generated medium long-term debt of 26.4 million. Regarding our corporate development initiatives during the period, a license agreement was signed with Algerian for exclusive commercialization of Juxtapid in Japan. The drug is indicated for the treatment of homozygous familial hypercholesterolemia and is a very important development for a recently established subsidiary in Japan, given its potential for significant growth. Companies operating under the name of Orphan Europe have been renamed Recordati Rare Diseases, which has now become the global brand of our rare disease business. Most recently, on the 12th of July, an agreement was signed with Novartis for the acquisition of worldwide rights for Signifor and Signifor LAR for the treatment of Cushing's disease and acromegaly. The agreement also provides for the acquisition of worldwide rights to ozilodrostat, an investigational drug for the treatment of Cushing's syndrome, in part in the U.S. and in the EU. This transaction represents a very significant and strategic contribution to our rare disease business. Moving on to slide three of the presentation, we will give you a bit more color on the latest transaction with Novartis. The transaction clearly is an achievement in the acceleration of the development of our rare disease business unit. And it implies, like I include, as I mentioned before, the acquisition of one marketed product and one late-phase pipeline product in the endocrinology segment. The key highlights of this transaction are complementary portfolio, enter the high-growth market of endocrinology, orphan designated drugs with IP protection and limited additional R&D spend, and global and perpetual intellectual property rights. More specifically, on Signifor and Signifor-LAR, this is an injectable somatostatin analog for the treatment of Cushing disease and acromegaly. It has IP protection until 2026. Estimated sales of $75 million USD in 2019, and an average EBITDA margin to potential peak sales of more than $100 million USD. These drugs are covered by orphan drug designation in the U.S. and Europe. Moving on to ozilodrostat, this is a potent, highly specific oral inhibitor of cortisol and aldosterone synthesis for the treatment of Cushing's disease and syndrome. It has IP protection until 2031. Marketing authorization applications have been filed in the European Union and the USA. And potential approval is expected in 2020 in Europe and 2022 in the U.S. The drug has an orphan drug designation in both the U.S. and Europe. Last but not least, we expect potential peak sales for this drug of in excess of $100 million. Moving on to page 4 of our presentation, a few details on the transaction. As communicated in our press release, there was an upfront cash consideration of $319 million, and there will also be regulatory milestones in addition to royalties and net sales contingent upon approval and market access of ozilodrostat. Funding was by existing liquidity and new debt facilities. And leverage, regarding leverage, this is an acceptable pro forma net debt to EBITDA level, leaving room for additional future M&A, which is clearly very strategic for us. Timing is expected for closing. The closing is expected in the end of Q3 2019. Moving on to page 5 of the presentation, a bit on the strategic rationale behind this deal. Goes without saying that it reinforces the recordati as a major rare disease player globally. It is a driver of long-term value growth and has a well-established and high-potential product with material revenue and EBITDA contribution. It expands the rare disease franchise into an attractive endocrinology space and leverages and expands their existing capabilities and organization. Moving on to page 6 of the presentation, I think that it's last but not least, I think it's important to underline that we are delivering on strategy. This deal is fully in line with group strategic objective announced at our Capital Markets Day on the 9th of May when we presented the three-year plan of the company. And if we look more specifically in the area in question, which is rare diseases, it delivers on three objectives that we had stated as primary objectives for this part of the business, being continued developing the existing portfolio of global brands, consolidation of our Latin America and Asia-Pacific presence, and invest in targeted BD and M&A to reinforce the global portfolio. At this point, I will leave the word to Frace, who will take you through the first half results of the company.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Good afternoon or good morning to everyone. Then on slide 7, we are presenting the performance of our corporate product, which is in line with our expectations. Sanidip, Canidipina sales have shown slight growth, and we continue to grow our Canidipina plant sales, while for the sales of the Zanipress, which is in the combination of Canidipina and Enalapril, these sales are down due to the competition from generic version as expected, but in this environment, with generic competition in all the major markets, we are, let me say, only decreasing our sales by 11.4%. We are very pleased by this result. The other corporate product, the overall sales, Urorec generated sales with a growth of 6.5%, and this is due to the good performance of the product in all the main markets. Also, for Aviva Growth, sales grow by 11.4%, and also here, this is due to the good performance of the product in all the main markets. Then we have the other corporate products, which are up by 12.2% and include the initial launches of the new treatment for the specialty of the new treatment for the schizophrenia. Then, regarding the sales of the franchise we acquired last year from AstraZeneca, then the sales are pretty in line with a slight decrease of 3.4% compared to the sales of last year. Sales in the first half were 48.7 million. And then our specialty, which are indicated for the treatment of rare diseases, generated sales of 155.6 million during the period. Here we have an increase of 5% despite the competition we have from the generic version of Cosmogen in the United States. Then good performance for practical all our corporate products. Then move on slide 8, which presents our diversified product portfolio, and this graph is usually shows the breakdown of our revenues by type of product, and our corporate product, including also the rare disease drug, account in the period for 67.1% of our revenue. Now, on slide 9, you can find composition of revenue by geography. Then, as usual, we start with our Italian business. Sales of pharmaceuticals in Italy are up by 7.1%. In our Italian business, worth mentioning is the good performance of Urorec and Cardicor, as well as the sales of Natural Point, the Italian company that we have acquired in June last year, and consolidated as from July last year. Pharmaceutical sales in France are up by 18.5%, and this is also thanks, as Andrea said in the beginning, the presentation to the addition of the product portfolio of Gynicor and Alodont, which are the two main products belonging to Tony Farm, the French company that we acquired in December 18. In Germany, sales are down by 0.9%, and this is mainly due to the competition from a generic version of Zanicret, which is our brand of the combination of Lercanitina and Enalapril in the German market. Revenue generated in Russia, Ukraine, and the other CIS countries is 51.6 million and are up by 6.1% compared to the same period of the preceding year, and include an estimated currency exchange losses of 0.6 million. Sales in Russia in local currency are up by 7.9%, and then we have seen a good performance in our Russian business, in particular in the second quarter of the year. And in terms of performance, worth mentioning is the significant growth of the corporate product, Prostaglandin, Olivetti, Rorec, and Panidil. Then in the US, the group pharmaceutical business in the USA is only dedicated to products for the treatment of rare diseases. Sales in the first half of 2019 are 51.6 million and are up by 3.9%. This is in euro denominated sales. In local currency, sales are slightly down, and this is due, as I said, to the competition from a generic version of Cosmogen. On the other hand, worth mentioning is the growth of other important products in our portfolio in the US, Calbazoo and Cisadana in particular. In Spain, sales are 46.6 million and are up by 6.3%, with a good performance of all our major products. Let's mention also that sales for the treatment of rare disease in Spain are also growing significantly. Sales in Turkey are up by 1.7% and include an important negative tariff exchange effect, which could be estimated to be 11.7 million. In local currency, sales of our Turkish subsidiary is very impressive, with a growth of 31.3%, and this is thanks to the good performance of all the corporate products, as well as some important local products. Then we have also a significant increase in sales in the other European countries, which is mainly due to the growth of sales in Poland and Czech Republic, as well as the direct commercialization by our organization in Nordic countries and in Benelux, where sales were previously made to licensees. And this is the only reason why the other international sales are down by 3.8%, which is due to the integration, as I said, in the local portfolio of products previously sold through license agreements. Then overall, a good performance practically in all our geographies. Slide number 10, the graph shows the geographical breakdown of our pharmaceutical revenue with no major changes compared to what was the breakdown in the previous quarter. Now we can move on slide 11 for presenting our first half results. We already analyzed and commented our revenue for the period. Let's move on to gross profit. Gross profit in the period is 520 million with a margin of 70% of sales, which is lower compared to the same period as the preceding year, due mainly to price and currency effects. We are buying our Metoprolol franchise in US dollars from AstraZeneca, and this has an effect, a negative effect in the cost of sales. For regarding selling expenses, our selling expenses increase less than sales and are therefore down as a percentage of revenue. Let me underline, despite marketing expenses for the launch of Reagila and also the new commercial organization we have put in place in the Nordic country, in Benelux, and also in Baltics. Regarding R&D expenses, are 59.8 million and are up by 11.4%, and this is due to the advancement of a new development program that is also linked to the amortization of the new intangible asset we have acquired in 2018 and beginning of this year. G&A expenses are up by 4.4%, but are reduced as a percentage of sales. Let me comment on EBITDA, which is 37.6% of sales, and with an increase of 7.4, better than our growth on our revenue. In this line, just for give you some indication, amortization charges are 34.6 million and depreciation charges are 12.2 million. And in particular, depreciation charges include the application of the new accounting principle, IFRS 16, with a positive effect of 5.2 million. Then we have a negative impact with the application of this new IFRS on the at level, but we have a positive effect in the EBITDA due to this increase on the depreciation. Net financial charges are 10.9 million. Here we have an increase of 2.5 million, which is mainly due to the recognition in this quarter in the P&L of the fair value of the cross-currency swap, which is due to the following the early reimbursement during the period of an underlying loan. This was a private placement we issued in the United States in 2013, and we had reimbursed in the first half of the year. Then the effective tax rate during the period is 24.8%, which is lower than the same we have at the same period of the preceding year. And let me finish again with our net income. Net income is 23.4% is 174.8 million, and we have an increase of our net income by 6.1%. Then, very solid performance in the first half of the year. Slide number 12 we have our division, the presentation of the split of revenues, EBIT and EBITDA between our two business segments, and regarding EBITDA, margin are 50.2% for the rare disease segment and 35.3% for the specialty and primary care segment, and these are in line with the previous quarter. Also in line with the previous quarter, the EBIT margin which are for the 6 months period 46.5 for the rare disease segment and 30.1 for the specialty and primary care segment. Just on slide 13, again our net financial position, which shows a debt of 610.9 million compared to the net debt at the beginning of the year of 588.4. As Andrea mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, during the period, the dividends were distributed for a total amount of 96.1 million. Then we pay also $30 million for the license agreement with Adelion for acquisition of the right to participate in Japan, and we pay another 20 million during this case for a milestone to Helsinki. Then, we have this negative impact due to the application of IFRS 16. Then, we continue to have a solid cash generation in the company also in the first half of the year. Now, we are at the end of the presentation, and Andrea will present you the revised target for the full year.
So, the revised targets are following the good performance, obviously, in the first half of this year, and obviously the integration, starting from Q4 contribution of the Signifor and Signifor Larno Zilodrostat business from Novartis. We expect Signifor and Signifor LAR to be accretive to group EBITDA already in 2019. So the new revised targets are 1,460 going the range of 1,460,000,000 to 1,480,000,000 versus the 1,430,000,000 to 1,450,000,000 of the previous target. Our EBITDA target go up to 500 to a range of 540 to 550 million euros. Sorry, 535-545 million euros. And compared to the 530-540 previously, and the operating income and net income stay on the same target already previously communicated, because this acquisition of Novartis, we perceive, and obviously is an investment for growth, and therefore implies costs in R&D, which obviously have to be taken into account in the EBIT and net income line. So, said that, I think we can move on to the Q&A.
Operator, could you please open the Q&A session?
Yes, madam. Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Jo Walton of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead, madam.
Thank you. I'm very sorry, Fritz, but it was extremely difficult to hear what you were saying. I think you were a little too far away from the microphone, so at least for us. So I do apologize if I ask questions. No, if I just ask questions where you've already given the answers, I apologize. I have three main questions. Firstly, from the guidance, how much of the uplift of the guidance has come from the new acquisitions, and how much has come from perhaps better than expected performance for the underlying business? I wonder whether you can give us, and I think you mentioned this, but again, I didn't hear it, the level of amortization that you have taken in the first half. I believe most of that's taken within the R&D line. And if you can help us on what the level of amortization will be going forwards, let's say for next year, when you have all of your current crop of acquisitions fully embedded in the business. I'm particularly interested in the amortization for the Signifor business, because it would be indicative of whether you expect that to have a greater longevity than the 2026 patent life, whether you feel that you'll be able to sustain that beyond the patent life. And another question that I would just ask, and I think you may well have given it, could you give us any idea of the Reglia sales and how that is developing this year? Because that's your first specialist product. And I'd also ask for a little bit more detail on Juxtapid, because it looks like the sales there were really very strong. Was it that it hadn't been promoted for a while, or is the level of sales of Juxtapid we're seeing indicative of what we're seeing going forwards? And I do apologize if you covered this in your presentation.
Okay. Sorry for not this inconvenience during my presentation, but no, probably these are not question I have already answered during my presentation. Do you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. Then, the first question, which is linked to the guidance, then we have increased our guidance, as Andrea said, thanks to both the good performance of the business, also the contribution for the last quarter of the two assets we have acquired, mainly for Signifor, and then in terms of sales, roughly we can say that half is linked to the good performance and half is linked to the contribution of Signifor sales, while in terms of EBITDA, the contribution of Signifor is less than half, also because as usual, in the year in 2019, also some extraordinary items and costs which are related to the transaction. Then, in this quarter, the contribution in terms of EBITDA of Signifor is a bit less than half what we have included in our guidance. This is the first question. The second one was linked to the amortization. Then, in our first 6 month result, amortization charges are 24.6 million. And what can I say? On a yearly basis, including also the amortization of the $390 million we have paid for the acquisition of the asset, and we expect to amortize this cost over 20 years, then you have to include, multiply by two what we have in the first half. Then we have also to add the amortization of some milestone that is linked to the Legal acquisition, and then you have to add the amortization over 20 years of the amount we have paid for Signifor and all the other stuff. Then this, and I agree with you, the majority of this amount has been classified as usual in the R&D expenses. Regarding the amortization period for Signifor, then we usually have the amortization period for the asset for which we have the full rights, and for both Osilodostat and Signifor, we bought the right for the two assets, then we expect to amortize over a long period of time, even if during this period could some generic competition arise, because this is a worldwide business and we expect to maintain a value in a long-term period. And then it's not linked to a termination, because there is no termination, because we have the right forever. And regarding the value, we believe that the business could have a long-term value, even if this could be the case, there will be some generic competitor we could arise. Regarding Reagila sales in the first half were around 3 million euro. Then the uptake, the market access was very positive, as we have always said. Now, in the quarter, we have had the price reduction, which we expected for our product in Germany. The uptake is a bit slower than expected, and overall, probably we expect to have sales of Reagila for the full year, which has been included in our target, which is a bit less than 10 million. Other question?
Just for this year, they're strong. Is this indicative of going forward?
Okay. Juxtapid are strong. We believe that is a good asset in Japan, and we believe
that it's definitely performing ahead of our expectations in the market, Japan market. It looks like the promotion put in place following the, as you mentioned, Joe, quite a few years of, let's say, not a lot of focus on the asset by Agerion, is actually starting to have an effect, and we're definitely performing better than we expected in our initial business plan for the product.
Thank you very much.
The next question is from Chris Ryan of Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi. Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. You mentioned that there is still room for acquisitions. In that, do you mean that that's in reference to the 1.5x net leverage kind of soft limit? And then also, how do you mean on that in terms of timing, since the acquisition is gonna be done in Q3 2019, would that effectively end it, you know, the acquisitions for 2019, or would you still be open acquisitions in the rest of the year?
Look, I will answer this question. I mean, as I mentioned in my well, as I mentioned, we think we still have an expectation to end the year around, considering the current acquisition, to remain around the 1.5x-1.6x EBITDA kind of level of leverage, considering also the Novartis acquisition that we just completed. Regarding opportunities, honestly, it's really linked to the opportunities. Obviously, we're looking for high quality assets, and if high quality assets don't come around regularly, so clearly if something does come along our way, also in the last later part of the year, we will look at it, and we will assess it and see what if we want to pursue it. It's we think we have space organizationally and financially to pursue other acquisitions. Clearly, the company now is focused on the execution of integration and the business plan of the Novartis acquisition. As I said, we cannot exclude, since we have the financial capability and the organizational muscle to do it, that we might look at other potential targets if they do come across and they're high quality.
Okay. Just one follow-up. How important is consumer health or OTC and in terms of the strategy, especially as it relates to acquisitions going forward?
We believe we are. I think we clearly stated that in our Capital Markets Day when we presented the three-year plan. OTC for us is a major area of interest for our specialty primary care business. We have an established presence in all the markets, main markets we operate in, and we are attracted by the business proposition and the diversification this brings with it, because obviously it's an out-of-pocket business, and it diversifies our portfolio from the reimbursed and the state reimbursed business. Yes, it is strategic for us to look for assets in this space.
Great. Thank you. That's all my questions.
The next question is from Martino De Ambroggi of Equita. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. I have a follow-up on the guidance, because I understood the split between the new products and the existing portfolio. What is the underlying assumption for Forex, which was negative in Q1? Just a confirmation, IFRS 16 is not involving the revision of the EBITDA for the current year. The second question always related to the full year guidance.
Martino, sorry if I interrupt you, but I think you need. It's a bad line. Your line is pretty bad, so we're actually having difficulties understanding what you're saying. I apologize. Can you just-
Absolutely. No problem. I apologize. Sorry. I try once more. So for the guidance, what is the underlying assumption of Forex, which was negative in the first half, and just the confirmation that IFRS 16 is not part of the revision. It was also included, although the impact is limited, but at EBITDA level, it should have, shouldn't have any impact. And the second question, always on the guidance, if we summarize the full year guidance, the like for like growth, I don't know. I give you my estimate is roughly 3%, maybe slightly more in terms of sales, and a little bit higher in terms of EBITDA, just to have an idea of what is the contribution of the acquisition and the like-for-like growth.
All right. Okay, first question was linked essentially to the guidance and the effect. We have a negative currency effect, but this is a negative currency effect in terms of revenue, approximately 8 million euros in the first half, but compared to last year. If we compare our target, which is compared what our where our expectation in terms of effect at the beginning of the year, then part of this improvement in our guidance is also linked to the better scenario in terms of effect that we have had until now, and we expect by the end of the year, in particular for the Turkish lira, the ruble, and the US dollar. Then, in this year, we have been, compared to our expectation, we have been benefiting from a better scenario in terms of FX, and this is part of the improvement of our guidance for the existing business. The second question was?
The quantum is like for like, I don't think you're very wrong.
Okay. No, then that's the like for like we will disclose in our actual. Then today we have 4.1 in the first half.
Revenues wise,
then we expect this to be substantially in line with what will be the like-for-like by the end of the year. But this is all because the first quarter was 3.2, now it's 4.1, and we don't see major changes going forward. Then part of the increase of sales, as I said, is linked to currency effect, another is linked to good performance of some products, and as I said, approximately half of this is linked to the expected consolidation of the new acquired asset as from end of September, then for one quarter.
Okay, thank you. And still on the acquisition side, should we expect focus will remain on rare diseases, or you are satisfied with the acquisition already finalized?
Like I mentioned, and I answered the question before, no, it will obviously, like we stated in our three-year plan presentation, rare diseases is a main area of focus, but like we also reiterated in the three-year plan presentation, also the growth and sustainability of our specialty primary care business still remains an objective. And as I said, as I mentioned and answered the question before, in this space, the OTC area is an area of particular interest for the reasons I mentioned before.
Okay, thank you. Very, very last on the gross margin in Q2. Last year was exceptionally high, the gross margin, but could you remind us what are the reasons for the 130 bips of lower profitability in Q2?
Last year?
Yeah, compared to last year, there are 130 bips of lower gross margin.
This is mainly due to the exceptional performance last year rather than the performance in 2019. Having in mind that for the full year last year, the 2018, the EBIT margin was 32.7, and then we had, based on mix in particular, with a very lower cost of sales in the first half, which is not, let's say, normalized on a yearly basis. Then, if we compare the profitability in terms of EBIT in the first half 18 and in the first half 19, the decrease is mainly linked to the cost of goods, which was essentially due to a particular favorable mix in the first half last year. But let me also underline that this margin decrease is absolutely less important in terms of EBITDA. Then we have this decrease from 33.3 to 22.6 if we are looking at the operating margin, but if we compare the two periods in terms of EBITDA, then the margin is similar in the two periods, it's just 0.3% lower if we compare the two periods. Then, it's also due to where a different cost of sales, but we are also increasing our amortization, as I said at the beginning of our presentation.
Okay, thank you, Fritz.
The next question is a follow-up from Jo Walton of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead, madam.
Thank you. I wonder if I could ask both of you about the likely marketing cost as a percentage of sales going forwards with the mix shift to some of the slightly more primary care type products that you're getting, or maybe not so much primary care, but less rare disease products that you're getting in your portfolio. Do you think that your current SG&A as a percentage of sales is going to be appropriate going forwards as you have a global reach for some of these new products? I'm really trying to get at if there's any countries where you're going to use these as a means to invest, and therefore there'll be a short-term period where because you aren't involved in these specialty areas in this country, you're going to invest heavily beforehand, and therefore whether we might see an increase in SG&A for a short period of time.
No, we don't expect this. We don't expect this. Joe, very directly.
Thank you.
Then we have need to increase the organization in the rare disease space, but we are talking about a limited number of people because, as you know, the activity in the rare disease space requires very limited organization.
This applies also to the U.S., our assumptions, which is always the result of market research, targeting segmentation of the market, and the target that we need to visit for the new endocrinology business, is bringing us to an increase of the organization in the U.S. However, it remains a very small organization in the context, in the bigger picture. So, yes, we are obviously investing for the integration and the execution of the business plan of the newly acquired targets, but the numbers do not change the picture in any substantial way. And we're confident that what investments we're putting behind this acquisition are going to suffice to reach our objectives, which are obviously indicated in the peak sales potential that we gave you. But no, we are not expecting any kind of growth in the selling and in the SG&A kind of line and incidence compared to what we have today in our current P&L.
Do you believe that Novartis was actively promoting Signifor?
No, Signifor was not promoted in the United States for at least 2 years. So we believe there's quite a lot of upside, actually, based around this. And this is why we're putting a peak sales for the Signifor franchise, which are actually higher than the sales of 2018 and the expected sales for 2019 going forward. And the also promotion in Europe, which was still taking place, but let's say we believe that it had less focus of the promotion that we are going to put on the products and on the franchise. especially once the Osilostat product arrives to market. Clearly, that is going to be a launch product and will require investments.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Ms. Tachke, gentlemen, at this time there are no questions registered.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Have a good evening.